Although we have learned that a woman is obligated to bring certain karbonos, certain sacrifices when she gives birth, and included in this would be a woman who miscarries as long as the fetus had developed at least 40 days. If she then miscarries, she would be obligated to bring those sacrifices. And we've learned that if she miscarries during the melois period of her first birth, then she would not be obligated to bring an additional korban. The melois period for a man lasts for 40 days. The first week she would be tomei and pure, and then she would go to the mikveh, but for the next 33 days, any blood which would usually make her tomei, impure when she bleeds in that way, during those 33 days would not make her impure, and she would reach the end of those 33 days, which is 40 days after the birth. That is the end of her melois period, and if she gives birth to a baby girl, then she would be tomei, impure, for the first 2 weeks, and then she would go to the mikveh. And then for the next 66 days, if she would bleed in the way that would usually make her impure, she would not become impure, and her melois period ends after 80 days since the birth. So as we have learnt, if she miscarries a fetus which is at least 40 days old, which would usually obligate her to bring a korban, however, if this miscarriage took place within the melois period of her first birth, then she would not be obligated to bring two different sets of korbanos. Rather, she would only need to bring one set of korbanos, which she anyway does at the end of her melois period, and that would cover both the original birth and the miscarriage which took place during the melois period. Now, such a scenario is only really possible in the case where her first birth was a baby girl, and then her melois period lasts for 80 days, because if she gave birth to a baby boy and it only lasts for 40 days, so the fetus, which had to be at least 40 days old, would only be miscarried after the completion of her melois period. So the only scenario where it's possible for her to miscarry a fetus which is at least 40 days old during her melois period would be if her original birth was to a baby girl. And then we have this law that only one korban would be necessary to cover both births or miscarriages. Now, although only one korban would be necessary, her miscarriage would start a new melois period for that second birth. So if she miscarried a baby boy, then she would be tomei for a week and then have 33 days of being pure, even if she does bleed. Or if she gave birth to a baby girl, then she would start a melois period of 80 days, 2 weeks, and then 66 days. So there is a new melois period which begins. However, at least according to the first opinion of the Mishnah, if she were to give birth, or if she would miscarry a third time, which is within the melois period of the second birth or miscarriage, but it's already after the first melois period has ended. As the Mishnah describes, a woman who gives birth to many births or miscarriages, which would obligate her, or which have the potential to obligate her to bring korbanos, hepilo b'soich shmonim nekeva, if within the first 80 days she miscarried a baby girl, let's say this occurred on day 50, 50 days after the original birth, so this began a new melois period for the second birth, although she's still within the melois period of her first birth, and then she miscarried another baby girl within the 80 days of the second miscarriage. So let's imagine 50 days later, she gave birth to a girl. This is now 100 days after the first birth. So this is way after the first melois period has ended, but it's within the melois period of the second birth. According to the first opinion of the Mishnah, she would only be obligated to bring one korban for those three births, those three miscarriages. Because since the second birth is connected to the first birth, and therefore exempted by the same korban, on the same account, the third birth is certainly connected to the second birth, and so automatically it's also considered connected to the first birth, and she would only be obligated to bring one set of korbanos to cover all three occasions of miscarriage or birth. In addition, v'hamapeles to'omim, if she has a miscarriage of to'omim, which in general means twins, in this case it refers to triplets, or if even more than three babies were in her stomach. And we're talking about a case where she gives birth or miscarries one of them, and then within the melois period of that first birth, she gives birth to the second one, but the third child is only born, or miscarried more likely, within the malois period of the second miscarriage, but already after the first malois period has ended. In this case as well, according to the first opinion of the Mishnah, the Tanakhama, since the second birth or miscarriage is connected to the first one, and she's only obligated to bring one set of korbanos for both of those, the third one is also connected to the second one. It's automatically considered to be connected to the first one as well. All three of them are connected and would only obligate her to bring one set of korbanos. However, Rabbi Yehuda says the third birth cannot be connected to the first one because it occurred after the ending of the malois period for the first birth. And therefore, Mavia al Harishain, she's obligated to bring a korban for the first birth, the Einu Mavia al Hasheni, and she doesn't need to bring an additional korban for the second birth because that one is covered by the korban that she brings for the first one. But Mavia al Hashlishi, she is obligated to bring a korban for the third birth or miscarriage. And if a fourth birth or miscarriage occurs within the malois period of the third birth, but after the malois period for the second birth has ended, then ve'enu mevi'a la'harvi'i, she would not need to bring a korban for that fourth birth because it happened within the malois period of the third birth, the third miscarriage. And therefore the korban which she is bringing for the third miscarriage would cover that which occurs within that malois period. Alright, continues the Mishnah. Although most korbanos chatos, which is the most standard sin offering which comes to atone for particular sins, the Torah fixes exactly what animal needs to be brought, and this is regardless of how wealthy the person who sinned is. Nevertheless, there is a type of korban chatos called a korban oile v'yoyed, which the Torah prescribes for five different sins, which we're about to see mentioned in the Mishnah. And over here, it depends on how wealthy the person is, that would define which type of korban he would need to bring. For example, somebody who is poorer would only need to bring birds instead of a larger animal like a sheep. So in which scenarios does the Torah prescribe such a type of korban chatos? Eilu mevi'im korban oile v'yoyed, the following people would be obligated to bring a korban oile v'yoyed. Literally, this means a korban which goes up and down, because it depends on how wealthy one is. The cost of bringing it would go up and down. Number one, al shmias akol, on that which the Torah refers to as the hearing of the voice. This refers to somebody who made a false oath that he did not witness a particular event and that he cannot testify, and then later on he confesses that actually he was a witness and that he swore falsely. Secondly, valpitus fasayim, that which the Torah refers to as an expression of the lips. That's the language which the Torah uses when talking about somebody who makes a false, he swears falsely either to do something or not to do something, or if he swears falsely that he did in the past do something or didn't do something. If he later on admits that he swore falsely, this would also obligate him to bring a korban oile v'yoyed. Thirdly, val tumas mikdash v'kadoshav, sins to do with the impurity of the Beis HaMikdash or the korbanos, meaning if somebody is tome and he enters into the Beis HaMikdash or he eats a korban, this is a very severe prohibition, and if he does this by mistake, then he would be obligated to bring this korban oile v'yoyed, v'hayoledes, a woman who gives birth, v'hametzeira, and somebody who gets tzara'as, certain spots on the skin which come as a punishment in general and would make one impure. Once he completes his purification process, he will be obligated to bring certain korbanos, one of which is a korban chatos, and the type of animal which he would need to bring depends on his wealth. That's why it's called the korban oile v'yoyed. The third part of this Mishnah, and this is really going to be the focus of the next couple of Mishnayos as well, goes back to something which has been mentioned already in the Masechta, called a shifcha charufa. A shifcha charufa is a unique case which the Torah discusses of a non-Jewish maidservant. Now, although a non-Jewish maidservant is not considered to be a Jew, she is obligated to keep all of the mitzvahs that a woman is obligated to keep. Now, her status is defined as being non-Jewish, and therefore the state of being married that the Torah recognizes as a certain halachic status of marriage, that is only possible with Jews. That status cannot exist with a non-Jew, that state of connection of marriage. Now, a non-Jewish maidservant, although she's defined as being non-Jewish, she's obligated to keep certain mitzvahs, and to a certain extent, she has become partly Jewish. And the law is that she's only permitted to marry another slave, either a non-Jewish male slave, who is also obligated to keep the mitzvahs that a woman is obligated to keep, or even a Jewish slave. However, because at the end of the day, her status is defined as being not Jewish, a real state of marriage cannot exist between her and a Jewish person. The halachically recognized state of marriage cannot exist with this woman. And as such, although in general if somebody has relations with a woman who is married to another man, this is a very severe sin of adultery, and this comes with a death penalty as well as kores, where one is, so to speak, cut off from Hashem or the Jewish people. This is not the case with a non-Jewish maidservant, because that state of halachic marriage doesn't exist fully in this case. That having been said, the Torah does introduce a sort of new type of adultery, which would apply even with this woman, a shifcha, a non-Jewish maidservant, but there's a discussion in the Mishnah as to what exactly the scenario that the Torah is talking about is. It's difficult to understand that it's talking about a regular non-Jewish maidservant, because she's not considered to be Jewish at all, really. Although she's obligated to keep certain mitzvahs, her status is not Jewish, so she wouldn't be considered married, although she has relations and is considered to be designated somewhat to the male slave. This is not what the Torah recognizes as a halachic marriage, and therefore if somebody has relations with her, it shouldn't really be considered adultery. So what is the Torah's scenario, which the Torah introduced this idea of adultery, which applies even to a maidservant who is not technically Jewish? Now the truth is, only the next Mishnah is going to tell us what the exact scenario is. First, the Mishnah is going to go through the differences between this unique case called Shifcha Harufa and the other sins involved in having forbidden relations. What is the difference between this case of Shifcha Harufa and all of the other forbidden relations? The answer is, the Torah did not give the same punishment or the same korban. All of the other forbidden relations, if somebody has forbidden relations, he commits that severe sin. If he does it unintentionally, for example, he didn't realize who the woman was, or he didn't realize it was forbidden, they will be obligated to bring a korban chatos. The shifcha, whereas if somebody has relations with a shifcha harufa, this sin requires them to bring a different korban, but osham. They would bring a korban osham, which is a different type of sacrifice brought to atone for a sin. In addition to that, kol ha'ra'ah is bin keva, the sin involved in having relations with the other forbidden relations require one to bring a female animal as their korban chatos. Whereas for shifcha, one who has relations with a shifcha harufa, this unique case which the Mishnah will define in the next Mishnah, the animal that they are obligated to bring is bezochar, a male animal, to be more precise, a male sheep, a ram. Furthermore, says the Mishnah, kol ha'ra'ah, when it comes to the sin of having relations with a woman with whom it is forbidden, echad ha'ish ve'echad ha'isha shovim b'makos of a korban, both the man and the woman are equal, both in the punishment of receiving lashes, which would occur if they committed that sin intentionally, uva korban, and if they committed that sin unintentionally, for example, they didn't realize it was forbidden, or they didn't realize who the man or the woman was, then they would be obligated to bring the korban chatos. They would both have the same punishment. On the other hand, uva shifcha, when it comes to this sin with a shifcha harufa, lo hishvaisa ish lo isha b'makos, the Torah did not equate the man to the woman with regards to the punishment of receiving lashes, meaning that only the woman would receive lashes in a case where she committed this sin intentionally, but the man would not receive this punishment. And also, the woman does not have the same punishment as the man with regards to the korban. Only he would be obligated to bring a korban when violating this sin. An additional difference between regular forbidden relations and this case of a shivcha harufa is kol ha'ra'is also ben esam orel kagoymer. The Torah considers even the beginning of having relations with a forbidden woman as if he had relations fully in a normal manner. Meaning, even if they start having relations or they have relations in an abnormal, irregular way, they will be liable to the punishments which the Torah prescribes for those sins. And in addition, for every occasion that they have relations together, that would make them liable to an additional punishment for each time. Whereas we learned earlier on in this perek that this sin of having relations with a shifcha harufa is one of the unique cases where one korban would atone even for multiple occasions and repetitions of that same sin. And as well as that, one would only be liable to the punishments for having relations with a shifcha harufa if he had relations in the regular way. Ends off the Mishnah, zechem rehechem v'shifcha. The following is a stringency that the Torah said specifically with regards to having relations with the shifcha harufa, which does not apply to the other forbidden relations. She also wears hamezid kashogeg, that the Torah gave the same status to one who does it intentionally as if he did it by mistake. Meaning, that the man would be obligated to bring a korban even if he did this on purpose, even though in a regular case of forbidden relations, which is committed intentionally, there would be no obligation of bringing a sacrifice. Mishnah Hey, now the Mishnah defines Eizo Yishifcha. What exactly is the scenario which the Torah talks about of a Shifcha Harufa? Answers the Mishnah, Kol Shechetz Yishifcha V'chetz Baschayrin. A woman who is half a slave and half a free woman. Once a non-Jewish woman is freed, she actually becomes Jewish. And before we explain how exactly we can have a case where she's half free and half a slave, this would very much answer the problem that we had. The problem is that a non-Jewish woman cannot be in a state of halachically recognized marriage. So how can the Torah introduce this idea of adultery with a Shifcha Harufa? The answer is, she's half a free woman. So that part of her which makes her, which is free, allows a certain level of marriage to take place and to take hold. Now, how exactly do we end up with such a case? Quite simply, a simple case would be if she was jointly owned by two partners. She was a slave to two people, and one of them freed her. So now she's considered to be half free and half still a slave. Shemar, as the pasuk says, v'hofte lo niftasa. The Torah says that the woman which we're talking about has not been redeemed. She hasn't been freed, but the language of the Torah is quite strange. It implies that v'hofte lo niftasa. Being freed, she hasn't been freed. The language implies that she has been freed to a certain extent, and from there we learn that that is the scenario which the Torah is talking about. Div Rabbi Akiva, that is the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Shmuel, Omer Rabbi Shmuel says, now that's not the case since the Torah is talking about a non-Jewish maidservant. That means the Torah is referring to Zohi Shivcha Vadois, it's referring to a definite, fully fledged non-Jewish maidservant. And the Torah introduced this idea of adultery, which is relevant even with regards to this woman. At the end of the day, she's designated to a specific Jewish slave. That, according to everybody, is true. We're talking about a case where she's been designated, and in it, she has a certain level of bond with a Jewish slave. They have relations together in a fully permitted way. So if somebody else has relations with her, that is considered to be adultery, possibly a new type, but that's the case which the Torah is talking about. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, he holds like Rabbi Akiva, and he explains a different source for how he knows that we're talking about this unusual case of a woman who is half free and half not free, because Kol HaRayos Mefurashos, all of the forbidden relations are explicitly mentioned in the Torah, they're all grouped together, it's clear what we're talking about, Umashir, what's left. Essentially he's saying, why did the Torah describe this Shifcha Harufa in a totally different place in the Torah, not together with all of the other forbidden relations, and it also describes her in a strange way. The Hofte Lo Niftasa, she's been redeemed, not redeemed. Says Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, it must be that Ein Lanu Ela Shechetz V'Shifcha V'Chetz Baschayrin. It must be that we're talking about a woman who is half a slave, half a free woman, and that's why she's in her own category, because it's a case which we don't come across. She's very much different to all of the other cases which the Torah describes. Mishnah Vov, this Mishnah is really a continuation of Mishnah Dalad, and it continues to discuss the differences between the regular forbidden relations and the forbidden relations which one has with a Shivcha Harufa. Kol HaRayos Echad Gadol V'Echad Katan, all of the forbidden relations, if one of them who is involved is a adult above the age of Bar or Bas Mitzvah, and one of them is below the age of Bar or Bas Mitzvah, HaKatan Potter, the one who is below the age of Bar or Bas Mitzvah is not considered to be responsible for their actions, and they would be exempt from the punishments which apply. However, the one who is an adult would be liable. Likewise, Echad Erev, Echad Yoshein, if one of them was awake and one of them was asleep, Hayoshein Potter, the one who was sleeping, is not considered responsible for their actions, and they would be exempt. However, the one who is awake is liable. Echad Shogeg V'Echad Mezid, if one of them did it by mistake, they, let's say, didn't know that the other one who was involved was forbidden for them, but the other one did it intentionally, Hashogeg B'Chatos, the one who did it by mistake, would need to bring a Korban Chatos to atone for their sin. The Hamezid B'Kores, and the one who did it intentionally, would be liable to the severe punishment of Kores being, so to speak, cut off from Hashem and the Jewish people. This is unlike the case of a Shivcha Harufa. It's learned from Pesukim that in any case that she does not receive the punishment that she's supposed to, or that she would, if the conditions are not fulfilled for her to receive the punishment, then he would also not receive the punishment. So even if, let's say, he was an adult, if she was under the age of Bas Mitzvah, then just like she does not receive any punishment, he would also not receive a punishment. And this is learnt from Pesukim. Perek Gimel Mishnah Aleph. This perek goes into more of the specific details and general laws with regards to what obligates one to bring a korban chatos, in which cases does he need to bring one, how many, if he does multiple sins, if he does it multiple times, and many such details. And the focus of the first Mishnah is in a case where the person himself is not aware whether he has committed a sin or not, and he remains silent, and we're basing his obligation off of the testimony of witnesses. Omruloi, if people said to him, Ochal tochelev, you ate fat. This is referring to certain fats of an animal which the Torah forbids one to eat, and the punishment for doing so unintentionally is to bring a korban chatos. So witnesses say to him, and the truth is the Gemara explains we're talking about even a case of one witness, who says to him, you ate fat, and therefore you're obligated to bring a korban chatos, and he keeps quiet. He doesn't contradict the witness. Maybe chatos, the law is that he is obligated to bring a korban chatos. Eid oimer ochal. If one witness claims that he saw that he ate chelev, a type of this forbidden fat, ve'eid oimer lo yochal, but a different witness says that he didn't eat chelev. I saw what he ate, and I know that it wasn't chelev. Or ishoy meres, if a woman says ochal, he ate chelev, although in general a woman is not considered to be a valid witness, to obligate someone to bring a korban chatos, she would be valid. But in this case, ve'ishoy meres lo yochal, a different woman says that he didn't eat chelev. In these cases, based on the contradicting testimonies, we end up with a doubtful situation, and therefore maybe osham toloi, he will be obligated to bring a korban osham toloi, which is bought in a case where somebody has a doubt as to whether he is obligated to bring a korban chatos or not. Eid oimer ochal, if one witness says that he ate chelev, v'hu oimer, but he himself says, lo ochalti, I know for certain that I did not eat chelev. Potter, he's exempt. The Torah says, oihoidai lo chatosoi. If his sin becomes known to him, then he is obligated to bring the korban chatos. If he himself is denying that he committed the sin, then he's not obligated to bring the korban at all. Shnaim oimer ochal. What happens if two people, two witnesses, say, they testify, he ate chelev, v'hu oimer, but he says, lo ochalti, I didn't eat chelev. He denies the testimony. Says Mishnah, in this case, Rabbi Meir Mechai, Rabbi Meir says that he is obligated, and Omar Meir said, very logical reasoning. If we find that two witnesses are sufficient in order to make somebody liable to a capital punishment, if two witnesses testify that somebody committed a sin for which there is a death penalty, he will be killed by the Beis Din, by the court. And that's the highest level of proof that the Torah recognizes. It's enough to even kill somebody. So two witnesses is not enough just to obligate him to bring a korban, a sacrifice, in general we require less testimony for anything less than a capital punishment. Omlo the Chacham said to him, you've got logical reason, but we have an argument against that, because he's able to say that I ate the chelev, I agree with you that I ate the chelev, but I did it on purpose. If that's the case, he's not obligated to bring a korban. One only is obligated to bring a korban for eating chelev by mistake. So since he has the ability to make a claim that they are not able to go against, because they don't know if he did it on purpose or by mistake, they just know that he ate chelev. So he's able to make a claim that does not contradict, it doesn't go against what they're saying, and yet it would still exempt him from bringing a korban. And because he has the ability to make such a claim, we therefore accept any claim that he makes to exempt him from bringing the korban.